Hi, beautiful soul. Thank you for joining me today. This is Emily Alexina, and I'm really glad you're here. Before you jump into this episode, I want to just put a little star, a little warning star, especially if you're a close friend or a family member that I love. I do challenge some ideas within Christianity and within the Bible here in this podcast. And if there's anything that's triggering, please can we talk about it in person? I am sharing this to open up my heart and my journey in the hopes that it might help other people. And yes, if you know me personally, please can we talk about this before you decide to cut me from your life? All right, enjoy. Hello, dear friend, beautiful soul, Emily back here with you again. It's been a while. I had hoped it wouldn't be this long. I think this is what like every mompreneur often says, especially when they have very young babies and children around. It was interesting how the winter was very challenging in some ways. My kids were kind of constantly sick. I've heard that from a few families that that's what they also had. And so we were tending to sick children most of the time. We didn't really go outside. We didn't really see anyone. Well, we didn't see anyone for almost 2 months. But that gave us time for kind of home work that can be done easily at home, including podcasting, where my husband, he stopped his full-time construction job for a few weeks. And well, it's still ongoing as he tries to make other endeavors work for now. But him being home meant that I could focus on some other things, including the podcast. And so that's how I could find the time to do it. And I don't want this to be a full update today. So what I want to focus on is the resurrection story that I tell my children. This is something that is near and dear to my heart, and something that I want to talk about more. I have like a desire to bring this out into the public and get the conversations going about this. So I grew up going to Catholic school. I was baptized and actually had my first communion and confirmation. So within the Roman Catholic Church, I've got three of the major rites down. Vitaly and I are not officially married or within the church or anything. We, one day after knowing each other for 2 months, we sat down. He was visiting in Costa Rica and we were overlooking this incredible view. We were at my grandparents' place that they used to have. And we just had a deep conversation about what each of us wanted individually in our lives and what that could look like if we were together. And that conversation just seems really important to me, and it feels like Mother Earth and Father God were deeply listening, and Source was brought us together. And that felt like our marriage in a sense. And then we ended up getting pregnant a month later. I talked about this on an earlier episode that we didn't know each other very long before we got pregnant, or before I became pregnant. But it really felt like a divine intervention for him to come into my life, for my daughter to come into my life. My life took a very different turn that was very needed at the time. And anyway, that's because I was talking about marriage, right? And so we've had a few times where we have kind of come back to our vows. There was a year after Leia was born, I was going through some depression again. That was like my second time that it came up. And we sat down in the parking lot and we wrote on a napkin things that we promised to each other. Like one of them was not yelling in the house, not yelling around children, and just other things of commitment. And that was another deep, profound moment of recommitting to each other. And there was another moment this year, I find, was it in my pregnancy? I think it was after Theo was already born, but I just had this feeling of recommitting on a more deeper level to him and to the life that we want to create together. And that I felt that I needed that from him too. And so we had a very short conversation, but just kind of acknowledged this need to like sink down to a deeper level of commitment. And that's after being together for 9 years. So I find that very interesting that there's kind of these waves where it's like, are you ready to jump that next jump with me? Are you ready to quantum leap that next, go to the next level? Are we committing even more deeply to what we want to create together as a team? And anyway, I guess this kind of does segue into my beliefs about the church, Christianity, Christ, because I have definitely come away from what I was taught and grew up with in school. In my family life, I never went to church with my parents, like to Mass. My grandmother on my mother's side was interested in I guess maintaining the traditions a little bit, because I remember going to Easter Mass with her to a small church in Saint-Adèle in the Laurentians, north of Montreal, because I remember the smell of incense. And I don't think my siblings came. I think it was just me, because I don't remember anyone else being with me, and I don't know if they have these memories, but I did go to church with that grandmother. And my grandparents on my father's side are Quebecois, and the Quebecers kind of had this, they call it la révolution silencieuse, the silent revolution. La révolution tranquille, that's what it is. In French, it's like the tranquil revolution, and in English, we call it the silent revolution, where the church was so strongly embedded in Quebec culture, almost more, I think, than it, more so than in Ontario. I think my grandfather even went to like school with the priests, and there was a silent revolution where people just left the church in droves because they were frustrated with, well, with things that are what frustrate me about the church. And I actually don't know exactly the different points, but I know that my grandmother, she even talks about how she kind of turned away from God by turning away from the church. And she's quite strong about not going back to it at all. I think she makes a conscious choice to do that. So that would be an interesting conversation to have with her, actually. It would be to know the points that caused the révolution tranquille, the tranquil revolution in Quebec. But what was interesting is that I guess there was still this tradition, the like family culture and community culture of bringing people together for a baby's baptism, for example, or for a wedding, because those were both done in churches. And for my parents and all of my siblings, we all got baptized, which is very strange because my parents, as far as I know, never went to Sunday Mass or church. And we didn't speak about God, didn't pray at all in my household. However, in Oakville, Ontario, the town where we moved to when I was 7, I did go to a Catholic elementary school because it was the only French school at the time. My mom actually worked hard to open a public school, public French school, which still exists, Patricia Picnel, and she was part of creating that school. And I went there for a year, but it wasn't academically as rich, I suppose one could say. And so I decided to go back to the Catholic French school where my friends were. And I remember we had, you know, we studied religion, we talked about the Bible. It was kind of presented like any other of the classes subjects. So it's funny because when I look back, I didn't find that it was a spiritually rich education. It was almost like it was just taught as if like as the other subjects. So like science or math, you just, you know, learn the different stations of the cross, or honestly, I don't even remember what we learned. We had to memorize the Beatitudes. We had to memorize the different prayers. And that was kind of it. What I feel from my Catholic education is that I had very few teachers that actually lived their Christianhood. And I look back and now looking back, I can see that perhaps they did in their hearts, but I didn't feel that as a child, I think is what I'm trying to get to. I went to also a Catholic English high school, and I had a few teachers who were like practicing and had the feeling of it. But as a particular memory is of the chaplain of my school, who I was kind of probing him for questions. I've always been very interested in spirituality, in God, in connecting to things that we cannot see, in prayer. For example, in grade five, I had a teacher who was very religious, and she taught us to do the rosary in the month of May for the month of Mary. And so every day when I was 10 years old, in the month of May at school, we prayed the rosary. I think we prayed the whole rosary. And I remember going home, I had a glow-in-the-dark rosary and praying the rosary. And in my head, it was more of a logical thing. It was like, well, just in case, just in case this matters and God will care if there is a God, because we didn't really talk about it in my family. So I thought maybe I was atheist. This was more of a logical thing. Then I should pray just in case. That was my motivation. And it's interesting because now that I've come back to Mary, and kind of that divine mother relationship, and the other Marys in the Bible, it's been very interesting to revisit that relationship that did begin back when I was 10, and I was exploring what prayer meant to me. So all this ties into what I'm about to say about the resurrection story. Another thing I will add is that in university, I discovered yoga, and I started practicing that more as like a physical, to maintain my physical health. And I also started diving into the philosophy of yoga. I bought a few different books on yoga and Buddhism and Taoism. And although I was studying engineering in school, I was diving deeply into those practices and into those theories on my own time. I remember the tiny bedroom that I had. I would try to meditate, and I would just read these things and write them out in a book so that I really deeply understand them. And I found that they were starting to fill my heart and spirit in a way that Catholicism never had. And so it's very interesting to kind of come full circle and revisit this idea of Jesus and Christianhood. And to me, it has come through the kind of mother goddess and divine feminine work that I've been doing. It brings you back to Mother Earth, to loving Mother Earth, and it brings you back to how peoples around the world honored and prayed to and had relationships with Mother Earth. And one of the things I discovered through the book, The Way of the Rose, and one thing, it's an idea that they suggest, is that the praying to Mother Mary and the praying of the rosary and praying with beads is ancient and comes before Jesus. And when the Romans took over Europe and France and England, they were removing the Celtic cultures and pagan cultures that existed and giving people, almost enforcing onto them, the Christian religion. And what the way the authors of The Way of the Rose, who are Clark Strand and Perdita Finn, they suggest that the mother goddess worship and relationship that had been a part of humanity's spiritual ideology for thousands of years was transferred to Mother Mary worship and relationship and prayer, because that was the only way that they could do it. So I have delved into the European, Celtic and pagan, druidic philosophies. If you're hearing funny noises, this is actually Theo nursing. He's asleep and nursing on me right now. So where was I going? Yes, I've also been exploring the pagan Celtic ideologies and traditions. It's very hard to find anything about these cultures. There are in Europe a lot, many more people who are sort of practicing, but even then, I would say it's like the new paganism or the new Celtic cultures, because there have not been many lineages that date back from those times that have continued. I believe there probably are some, and there may be more secret and hidden, but it's definitely harder to find. Like, something I'm very interested in is the Druidic people. I did go back to a past life in some of my QHHT regressions that I've done, that have been done on me, where I was a, well, okay, I don't like to be too attached to the past life stories, whether it was me or a part of me or not me, and this is just a story that I saw in a meditation. I don't think that truly matters, but what does matter is the story that I witnessed and felt in my body, because when you go back to this time, you feel it in your body. And so this Druidic woman was living in the woods when I first met her, feeling extremely healthy. And there's always the question, what food does she eat? What does she drink? And what I saw is that she doesn't eat any food. All she drank was water from this river, this little creek in her woods. And her job was to care for the woods and care for the forest. And she would do that by putting mud and different clays on trees or branches that had been broken, which is interesting because I only learned a few years after that that's actually how people heal trees, is with clay. And I learned this through some herbal plants that are ingredients that come from trees, like cramp bark and other things, where they, when they remove the bark from the tree, they will heal it with a patch of clay. So that's interesting because I first learned about that in this past life meditation. So she would eat, she would drink water, and she eventually was kind of visiting the edges of the forest near this new village that was being built, and fell in love with a man there and decided to live among the people of this village, which I saw was some kind of big city in France, possibly Paris, which I've had some karma with in this life. But what was very interesting about her, okay, one thing I will share here, I feel like I'm kind of going off again on another tangent, is that she, at one point I saw her go to like a forest grove and meet with other people like her who were more like forest dwellers, I guess. They were called druids by the outside community who wasn't a part of them, but they just felt they were forest dwellers and caretakers, and deeply, deeply connected to the divine, to source, both the divine mother and divine father. And they could communicate telepathically, so they usually did not have to gather together. And at that point, the Romans were already after them. And so they had come together to kind of discuss a more important meeting, which was like, how do they move on going forward? And there was always peace. This woman, whenever I connect to her and her story, it's always very peaceful. Just such a deep sense of connection and flow to all that exists. There was never any stress. And so hear this. These people were being persecuted and run down and hunted down. And they came together in peace, deciding what was the next thing that they wanted to do. What would be the best thing that they could do going forward in the highest interest of themselves and the earth and the all the other people in humanity. And what they were saying is that some of them should go and merge with these newcomers and this new way into these villages of other people. And some should stay in the forest so that they could be written about in history. This has really stuck with me. They, on purpose, continued to live a difficult life of persecution, not a difficult life in nature, because that was their life that they loved, but a difficult life of persecution so that they could be written about in history. That is, if they had all gone to villages and merged with the people and kind of blended themselves and melted and disappeared in that sense, no one would have written about them. So I find that very interesting. And this woman decided to go into the village. She was one of the people who would pass down her genetic information. And she began eating what the people ate, although she didn't really need it. She was a subtle healer. So she would kind of go to people and do some hands, laying of the hands healing. Kind of with like a little sparkle in her eye, a little twinkle in her eye, and a little like giggle to herself that she knew she was doing these things when she wasn't supposed to, according to the priests of the village. And she ended up passing away, you know, with much love from everyone in her village. She had 3 children and just had a very peaceful life. It was just like, that was the work that I had to do in that life. That's what she was thinking. And so that's why I feel very connected to the Druids. And what I've found online, I haven't found too much information that really feels good to me. So I would love to one day do a trip to France and see if I can meet anyone who comes from these lineages or is kind of practicing in the way that feels aligned to me. All that to say that that's kind of my background of what brings me back around to Christianity. I once read this passage in a book called The Secret Knowledge, Hidden Secret Knowledge by Dolores Cannon. And it's a book that is channelings from past life regressions or hypnosis meditations that Dolores Cannon used to perform. And it's like different secret knowledge from different lifetimes of different people. And this book is really fascinating because it's very sporadic. It's not like one lineage. It's kind of different people around the earth. And one of them was a woman who was in France, part of a group of women, and they were keeping secret knowledge in the caves of France, and they were all women. And she was basically, I think she died with the information, basically in this cave with the hidden manuscripts. And they were saying that it was harder and harder to find people to join them. They were being hunted down. And this really sparked my interest. I was like, oh my gosh, I need to know more. And there was a little footnote and it said to check out the book, Anna, Grandmother of Jesus by Claire Hartzong, I believe. Oh no, that pointed me to The Power of Mary Magdalene by Stuart Wilson and Joanna Prentice. So that this kind of led me on a goose chase of Mary Magdalene and the Magdalenes And I have read a few channeled books now by Claire Hartsong, Anna, Grandmother of Jesus, and also The Power of the Magdalene by Stuart Wilson and Joanna Prentice. And they have led me back to Christ and Jesus, in a sense. Now, I see a lot of people on Instagram posting about their return to Christ after being into the esoteric and yoga and other practices, and how they've completely left those devilish practices behind. That is not my experience, although I can understand and respect those people's journeys. My experience is that it's all kind of, I mean, it's all part of the same, not the same path, but it's all part of my path, I guess. And that coming back to Jesus and the Essenes and Mary Magdalene does not negate any of the yogic, Vedic astrology, Reiki practices and ideologies that I've learned. To me, it just kind of continues to complete it in a way that I think is never finished in our lives unless we reach enlightenment, really. We're always kind of getting closer and closer and adding little bits here and there. So these books have changed the way that I see and understand the life of Jesus and the Essenes. There's also a book called Jesus and the Essenes by Dolores Cannon as well. And yes, they are all channeled books, and all of these people were trained in QHHT by Dolores Cannon. So they are all kind of in her lineage, which I will say, but that is important because if ever you've listened to anything by Dolores Cannon, we took her training back in 2014 or 15, I think right after she died. We were watching her before she died and connected to her. And if you're connected to her in any way, I feel that her energy is very pure. She just has a lot of love, a lot of openness, a lot of open-heartedness, deep care for people. And I find that her lineage and people that are trained under her have a really good vibe. Of course, that's not to say that it's perfect. Many people and many things are imperfect. So I keep that in mind. So I read these books. Another thing, yes, about channeled books and books that are outside of the Bible. I know people like don't like to read things that are outside of the Bible by Jesus. I guess because it could be wrong. It could lead them down the wrong path. It could be temptation or things like that, which again, I totally get. I think that we can get enlightened by and kind of reach spiritual fulfillment by sticking to one thing, for sure. I think there can be huge value in that, and that doesn't work for me. And that doesn't work for my personality, at least not yet. And my whole journey and research has brought continuous softening and opening of the heart and spirit. That to me just show me that I'm on the right way, for me anyway. And in these books, now I also don't think that these books are 100% historically accurate. The authors even say that they likely are not, and there are some discrepancies, but mostly things really line up between all the authors. Another really interesting book that I just finished is The Meaning of Mary Magdalene by Cynthia Bourgeot, which is an older book. Actually, all of these books are about 10 years old, and or even older, 10, 20 years old. Baby Theo is awake. And Cynthia Bourgeot comes to writing about Mary Magdalene through analyzing biblical verses themselves and also the Nag Hammadi Gnostic scrolls, as they're known, which includes the Gospel of Philip, the Gospel of Thomas, I believe, and the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. And those are very consistent with more Eastern philosophies that I'm familiar with through yoga. So it all kind of comes together in an amazing way. Okay, this is like a half hour explanation of why I tell my girls the resurrection story that I do. But one thing that really comes to me from these books is the power of community. So, but all of these books talk about the Essene community that Jesus lived in. And they talk about how many people were helping him. These books point to the fact that there were not only 12 close male disciples, but also 12 female disciples to balance the masculine and feminine energies in his circle. And that he himself had Mary Magdalene as sort of a partner or consort. Some even argue as a wife and mother to some of his children. I'm not sure about that. I don't feel that that is very important to me, but I do think that they were in some kind of a partnership of some kind. Again, whether it was romantic or not is not very important to me. These books describe light conception, and so they talk about conceiving children without physical intercourse. I think that that is a big possibility of how these higher humans interacted. But yeah, so there was this deep importance of community, and both books talk about how after the crucifixion, the tomb was the tomb of Joseph of Arimathea, the tomb that Jesus went into, and that there was a back entrance. There was a way that they could come in because they knew that his body would be there and that it would be pretty mangled after the crucifixion, and that they would come in to heal it. And the books are kind of different about exactly what happened, but essentially there's this idea of the community around Jesus that helped him heal and that kept him tied to earth, even when he explored the other realms as he was kind of half dead. So there, one of the books also points to yogic practices, and like Buddhist monks who are known to sit in meditation, and essentially shut down all their vital signs. And like, you don't read a pulse. They don't even generate heat from their bodies. But that they wake up out of these meditative states after a certain amount of time. And so I do believe that Jesus traveled to India and learned a lot of these esoteric practices. There are some really cool temples, apparently, in northern India where their deity is Jesus, who would have visited. Like, they're ancient, and they come from before it would make sense that Christianity reached India, that these are like old, ancient Jesus worshiping temples. And that's not the only reason that I believe Jesus did go to India, but I do believe that he and the Essenes were well-versed in the theologies and ideologies of the different sacred spiritual peoples of the world at that time that they could reach. So the people of the Celts, the Druids in Britain and in France and Europe, the Greeks, the Egyptian practices of Egypt, and also the ancient yogic Hindu and Buddhist practices of India and Asia. So I do believe that Jesus was able to enter an extremely deep meditative state where he possibly didn't even suffer on the cross as much as we think, because he was not connected to his body. And I think that that is one of the powers and strength of the resurrection story, is that he did show us that we could vanquish death, that we could vanquish the physical body, when we were in full and complete alignment and devotion to God, which I will call Source, or to, you know, Divine Father, Mother. And so there's this aspect of the community helping him to do the work that he was doing. And that's kind of what I like to tell my girls, just because I think that community is incredibly important, and that in any human who does anything extraordinary, there is often an incredible community of hidden people behind this person that allows them to be that way. And that could be their parents, you know, how they were raised. It could be their deep faith and like spiritual beings, angels and ancestors, or other spiritual beings who are supporting this person. And I do believe that the Essene community that was around Jesus was like a larger community of people who knew he was coming, prepared his way to come, that the mothers and grandmothers raised him to be able to do, to be the man that he was going to be. They raised the people, the women and men who were going to be around him, his friends who were going to help him. He had his uncle, Joseph of Arimathea, who had a lot of money. He was a merchant and was in the economy of like trading goods, and had a large amount of ships that he could use to, you know, bring these goods from England and different places around the world. And that's also how he was able to transport spiritual aspirants and students around to the different spiritual centers of that part of the world, and also texts, so manuscripts and such as that. And so he had his uncle who was also helping to support him, you know, that this uncle had had different houses and different buildings in Jerusalem and in the area that they could, that the Essenes could stay at and work from. And he is also the one who set up this tomb, and they knew for a very long time that the crucifixion was coming. They knew that Jesus was coming to bring in the light. They knew the work that he was coming to do. And so I do believe that the crucifixion and resurrection are incredibly, incredibly important events in human history. I do believe that Jesus came and brought an incredible amount of light and love to earth. I believe that he brought love and light to the religion that was created from him. And I believe that his name and religion was used for some not so good things, was used for political, is Teo doing something? That his name was used for political gain, was used to control people, was used to control people politically. For example, I don't think he would have been okay with the witch burnings. And this is something that is hard for me, because I find that if the church doesn't recognize the witch burnings done by the Inquisition, then I have a hard time. Okay, excuse me. Baby woke up. He tore the label from under the chair that I'm sitting on, was choking on it, so, I mean, not really choking on it, but eating it, so I had to take that away from him. Then he had a dry diaper, tried to put him on the potty, and he got really angry at me for that. I know he's going to pee in the next 2 minutes, and I know he's got one coming, but he's really resisting the potty right now. Anyway, that's life with a baby. So coming back to, yes, the witch burnings. This is something that I have a really hard time reconciling within myself, and I'm still working on this. Most of what I love and I am into right now, herbs, natural healing, prayer to the goddess, to nature, connecting with nature spirits, land spirits, attending births and women's empowerment, all of these things, singing and chanting with women, would have, you know, have me burned at the stake 500 years ago. And I don't think that the church has kind of rectified this issue. And so, I mean, when the church, I talk about the Roman Catholic Church. So that's one point. I don't believe that the Bible is perfect. It was, I think, put together finally in the year like 300 or something AD. So I don't think that it is perfect and 100% accurate. And I think that they left pieces out. And I think that this is kind of shown in The Meaning of Mary Magdalene by Cynthia Bourgeot. She kind of brings up these points of the other gospels and how the Bible states that all the disciples were unanimous in it being written this way. But that's a very convenient thing to say when you've cut out anyone who would have disagreed. But again, I think that if people want to stick to just the Bible, that's fine. This is just kind of where I'm at. And being able to be honest about it with myself and seek other professionals and humans who have delved into this topic and feel similarly, it's like it's brought such a soothing balm to my soul and heart, because it kind of means that I can explore this idea of Jesus and open up to Jesus and his people and his teachings, open back up to them, because I've acknowledged all these feelings I have about it. I also find that the Bible and Christianity itself is very patriarchal and uplifts the man to put down the woman in a lot of ways. And yes, so those are the things that I don't like, and how that pushed me away from the church and Christianity, really. And now coming back to it through Mary Magdalene and Mother Mary and Grandmother Anna has been very interesting. And so Easter has been a cultural thing that we continue to do in my family. That I grew up with as a child. We always got together as a family for Easter with a nice meal, with an Easter egg hunt. And as my children grow older and I bring different traditions to them, I really want our traditions to be meaningful and to not just do things the way everyone else does them just because that's what we're going to do. I don't like all the sweets and sugars and different things at a lot of these holidays, especially in our day where we know that the quality of these things is pretty much zero. Like if you buy dollar store chocolate eggs, I would really want to know the ingredients of them. Like what is in there? How old are they? How were people paid to make them? All of these things. Yes, it just doesn't really go along with kind of our other family values. And so I'm looking at how do we bring these traditions to match and be molded into the values that Vitaly and I want to bring to our children. And so with the resurrection and Easter, We talk about how life is coming back to life. There's a beautiful story that I tell my girls at solstice about these fairies who see the sun kind of getting weaker and weaker and then going down below the horizon, and they think he's dead. They think he has gone and died because he was getting weaker, and they're really worried and they're crying about him and they're worried about nature, because how will anything live without the sun? And then with a little bit of adventure, they eventually come to a clearing in the woods where everyone is gathered, including the old grandmother, the mother, and the young daughter, and they're holding this new baby son that has been reborn at solstice. And it shows us the teachings that everything lives, dies, and lives again in some sense. And so I tell that to my girls, tout vit, meurt, et vit encore. Everything lives, dies, and lives again. And this is kind of the story of solstice, is like the rebirth or the reawakening, but it stays in darkness for a little while. And it really only comes to fruit when everything starts to germinate and be seen at the surface level at springtime and at the equinox. And so I have friends who are, you know, very like-minded to me, who have completely pushed anything Christian and Bible out of their world because of the previous things I mentioned. And so they choose to not celebrate Easter, but they will celebrate Ostara, which is the equinox. And I kind of like, personally, for our family, how Easter comes, you know, the earliest I think it can come is a week after the equinox, like very soon after the equinox, but often it's like 2-3 weeks after the equinox. And it's when you really feel the effects of the equinox, of spring being here, especially in Canada. Some other countries, like in Europe, have there's flowers and things start coming up in March. We barely have any coming up here in Canada, but I find this weekend we can really hear the birds chirping. We can see the bunnies in the yard. And so nature is really coming back to life. And one thing that the Roman Catholics did when they took over Europe and they started ousting and putting down the pagan traditions and cultures and ideologies is that they sneakily replaced a lot of the pagan pagan festivals with Christian festivals. And so Easter is meant to replace Ostara. And the story of Jesus being put to death and coming back to life is very similar to the story of nature being put to death in the winter and coming back to life at spring. There's also this idea of fertility, eggs being, you know, laid by the birds. And so Leia even asked me, my eldest, she's like, why do we even do this Easter thing? Why do we have eggs? Like, what does this have to do with anything? And I'm really glad that she asked me. And I told her, well, bunnies represent fertility. They represent creation and this new creation energy. They represent life because they can bring forth so much life. They're also the food for many, many predators. And the eggs are the eggs of the birds and the eggs that we eat. And again, this is life. Life comes from an egg. And with the resurrection story, so I bring that in, and the resurrection story, I come back to everything lives, dies, and lives again, and that Jesus came on earth to really show that to us. I personally don't really like the idea that Jesus died for our sins. That doesn't align for me at the moment right now. And so I don't say that Jesus died for us. I mean, in a sense, I think he came for, and he did what he did for humans and for the earth to bring more love and light. And there are stories, there's so many beautiful stories. We're actually reading the story of Krishna right now. And the beginning of the story of Krishna is that Mother Earth felt, Krishna is one of the Hindu gods. He's like the blue flute playing god, the cow god. And he, Mother Earth was really saddened that the world had gotten darker and more evil. And so she prayed and prayed for help to come. And so the creator god Brahma, he brought Mother Earth to the to Vishnu, who is like the preserver of life. He helps to maintain life and harmony. And so Brahma, the creator, brought Mother Earth to Vishnu and his wife, and she was able to plead with him. And Vishnu said, "Do not worry, I will come down to earth very soon and bring more light again." And so I find it, and there, I've heard from other people saying that there are many parallels between the story of Krishna and Christ. And it's interesting how Krishna and Christ have similar sounds. I don't hold too much importance to that, but I note it and I find it interesting. And reading the story of Krishna is a nice parallel to the story of Christ at this time of year. So I do believe that Jesus came with a mission for humanity, and also kind of for himself, what his soul had to go through. I believe in past lives, certainly. I believe that, you know, in near-death experiences where we can like kind of die but still be connected to the body and then be brought back to the body. And in one of the beautiful books, I believe it's in Grandmother Anna, the Anna book, she talks about how when Jesus would quote-unquote died on the cross, his soul went into different realms, and that there was a group of disciples who were praying in a cave and were holding the energy and were helping him keep the silver thread of his soul attached to his body so that he could come back. And I find that very fascinating. And I've read about this idea of this silver thread in other areas. I can't remember now, but just how different places, unrelated authors, sometimes in different languages, because I can read in French and Vitaly reads in Russian. So you know that they're not, I mean, maybe they could be related and know of each other's work, but it's just very interesting how different people from different places will talk about these different phenomena. And again, there's this idea of the community helping him do the work that he was doing. And so that's part of the story that I tell my daughters. I say that he was persecuted by the Romans and the Jews of his time. They didn't like what he was saying. He was bringing a new message, a message of love, but Jesus really believed in what he had to do, that he had to keep bringing this message. And so he stood up and he said something, no matter how hard it became. And he followed his heart and he followed his divine guidance, no matter how hard it became. And Jesus even said that everything that he did, we can do and more. And so I tell that to my girls when we pray at night. I say that we remember that we are lights of God on earth, that we should never forget that we are ourselves divine beings, that they are divine beings, that each one of us, each human, each life form is precious, no matter how bad of a thing they might do in the day, or even, you know, some humans, no matter what bad things they do out in the world, they are still a spark of God. Another thing I find important is the aspect of his mother and Mary Magdalene. Mary Magdalene is the one who finds him at the tomb, right? And Cynthia Bourgeau highlights this in her book, that Mary Magdalene like never left Jesus' side. And in her gospel, in the ancient text of her gospel, which I get shivers when I hear parts of it. It's a very short text because many parts of it have been lost and removed. But she kind of talks about how Mary Magdalene never left Jesus' side. And so they call her in some circles the apostle to the apostles, that she was his highest initiate. She was the student of Jesus that brought that elevated to a most high level. And there are legends that she then went to France, that they landed at Sainte Marie de la Mer, the Saint Mary's of the Sea, where they landed and where they created some communities and kind of tried to continue their teachings and their ways from that time. Is there anything else that I want to add to that? So all of that, yes, is does that clear? I don't know if that's clear of what I teach my girls in the resurrection story. I teach that Jesus died on the cross because of the persecution, but also just what he knew he needed to do, and that he, with strong practice of meditation and understanding of the spiritual science of his body and of his soul, I don't think he suffered too much. Just like there are different meditative practices to not feel pain in the body, hypnosis strategies that can allow people to undergo surgery without feeling anything. I believe quite strongly in all of these practices, and I believe that Jesus had some of these tools in his pocket when he was undergoing the crucifixion. I believe that he had family and people helping heal his body after the resurrection in the tomb, that while his soul was away for 3 days, there were people tending to his body and to his wounds. And that Mary Magdalene was his highest student, and that she was there for him when he came back. And also the role that his mother played. And so to me, that just feels more balanced in the essence of the masculine and feminine. It feels like I can finally tell the resurrection story. I think it is a story that has marked the West very strongly, and so I do want my girls to be familiar with it. As Leia grows older and all my children grow older, we will discuss what other people think of it and what they say, and just to be aware of what different people, you know and think about it. I know that some people could be maybe in an uproar and shocked about what I shared today. And as I shared in a post about the Our Father prayer that I use for myself and my children, this is not meant to shock anyone. This is really just sharing my journey away and sort of back to, in a sense, Jesus. He is not the only enlightened human that I kind of use in my spiritual toolkit and that I become inspired by. I still am connected to some yogic saints, to the Buddha, and even to some Hindu saints. I believe all of these are simply facets of source of the ultimate love that exists and holds everything together and creates everything. And so this is kind of comes from the Hindu philosophy, or I guess more yogic philosophy, the bhakti, the devotional aspect of being connected to these higher humans and saints and angels, elevate us and our spirits and our hearts. And I know there could be the argument that being connected to many different saints and enlightened humans and gods is like not monotheism, which is an important aspect of Christianity. But I think it is not that either. It might not look like that on the surface, but if you dig deeper, even in bhakti yoga, so in the devotional science of yoga, they talk about how devotion to any one thing, you know, it could be a statue, it could be a person, it could be a god, a saint, that a human, if a human does that completely and fully, unconditionally, opens their heart and soul in love to this image of God. God is in everything. Source, the creator, is in everything. And so if a human really gives themselves over in that entirety to that thing, that they can reach complete fulfillment, because it has been so like single pointed, that singleness. And I think that's what Christianity is trying to get to. But I don't think that being connected to different facets of God that help us walk the path, that help us step up every step of the way, I think that they can be valid steps on the journey. I hope that's clear. If anyone wants to discuss this with me or has feedback, I would love to hear about it. The best place to reach me right now is on Instagram at This Raw Mom Life. But I think I'm going to be changing up a few things quite soon. So keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on the description box below. It might update where best to connect with me. I really love sharing these things. These things are on my heart, and connecting and discussing these ideas is also very exciting to me. Thank you for listening today. I wish you a beautiful day.